Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Christian and I were at the Prairie Whale in the Berkshires, in Great Barrington. Shout out. They have one bathroom, which was troublesome for me one day because when I went in there, somebody had just come out. They had polluted, let's say.
What do you mean?
Well, they had...
they had left stuff in there?
Yes. Well, they hadn't left it in there. They had
permanently.
They had left the vapors of the thing in there.
I understand.
Let's just say that. And is that grosser than just saying they crapped?
It's one of the grossest things I've ever heard.
Poo vapors. Normally, in that situation, I will hold it. But this was more of an emergency, and there's nobody else waiting, so I felt like, okay, I'm going to run in and pee.
Was yours a number one emergency?
Definitely a one.
Okay.
And when I came out, a very nice lady was waiting to use the bathroom, and I felt the need to tell her that the odor that she was going to experience wasn't the result of that.
It wasn't your product.
No, it wasn't. I've made products in the past, but I would never.
Didn't have to tell her that part of it, though.
No, she probably assumed that. But I did tell her that I wasn't responsible. And in doing so, I think I sounded guilty. I think I was protesting, as Shakespeare said.
You know, it's ironic that now you're sounding guilty recounting the story.
Exactly. Well, we talk about this today, and it relates to what we're going to get into today on the episode. So let's get into it.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
You're listening to Life is Short. I'm your host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart.
And with me, as always, is my equally odor-producing...
I knew you would say that.
We all have.
We all do it.
And there's no shame in it. And yet, I do have shame.
Also, everyone's been in that position, I would guess, at some point in their life. You know, when you go to a public
bathroom
and you come out and you're not responsible for what's in there, and people think you are. I feel like that's happened to everybody.
It happened to me again when I was working in Atlanta recently, where I chose the other option, which is to just not go in. I held it for the ride home because it was so horrific that I'm not good at explaining that it wasn't.
Well, let me ask you this. If something is that offensive to you, what is a bigger deterrent? Going in there yourself or being blamed for the smell once you come out?
Being blamed.
That's worse, really?
Going in, especially now we have masks.
The masks don't remove the odor from
not all of it, some
reaching
of it.
Your nostrils.
They do some of it, don't you think? Oh, I'm sure. Hmm. Yeah, I think it's that. It's just the shame of like having been, because it's also a rude thing. It's just rude.
Of course.
It's just like gross and rude. Why would you do? But like,
well,
then
sometimes you can't.
I know you can't help.
You can't help it.
I know. And so I should be.
It's very judgmental of you.
I should be more respectful of that. But it was. This was an instance where, and I'm sure she. And she said something like, after I explained it, she was like, "Sure, you know." She may have just been playful, but she also may have. And even if she thinks I probably didn't do it, I knew, and I could see her the rest of the meal, because she was sitting near us. There, I could see, she kept kind of looking over. I could tell there was definitely a seed of doubt.
Well, and also not to like, oh, boohoo, I'm famous, but there is, when you're a known person, there's an added problem with it, where if that happens to you, this woman conceivably could go on Instagram and be like, oh, Justin Long left a really foul odor in this bathroom. And that's a story. And then it becomes like a thing that people laugh about. So why are we talking about being falsely accused of something?
Wrongful accusations? Well, in a very glib, playful way, that happened to me once. It happened to all of us. And today, our guest, well, because it happened in a much more severe, much more dramatic, life-altering way to our guest today. Our guest is Amanda Knox. You've all heard of her. You all might not know her story as well as we now do, as well as you will once you listen to this episode. But she was somebody that I was aware of for years. She was a fixture in tabloid news in general.
She was infamous.
Yes. Yeah. For a long time.
Our first infamous guest, I would say.
Yeah. Right?
She rose to infamy. She was accused of committing a horrific crime, murder, in Italy when she was a student, when she was an exchange student in Italy, and it became a massive media sensation.
And understandably, because it was this, you know, this, well, we get into this very, and she was pretty, and she was privileged, and she was all of these things that we think white, and yet she got wrapped up in this very gruesome murder. And we, it was fascinating talking to her. I'm now, I've been trying to think if we've had any infamous guests, and I know we've had guests who have, like, toyed with infamy. They've had degrees of infamy, but mostly they're just...
She's a person who's famous not by choice.
Sure, not at all. Yeah.
She did not choose to become famous, but she became very famous. And her story is harrowing. And there's a great documentary on Netflix about it, which we saw before before Justin talked, were called. It's just called Amanda Knox. And it is fascinating and tragic what she had, what she went through. And she was falsely accused of this horrible crime. And but now she's made it out on the other side, and she's older now, and she has a career and a husband and a podcast.
Great new podcast.
Podcast called Labyrinths that she hosts with her husband, and she has some really interesting guests like Malcolm Gladwell and Andrew Yang. And so she's lived to tell her story.
Yeah, she's come out the other side. She's come out glowing, really. And we'll get into her whole story. It's fascinating, the ins and outs. But I think it's helpful if you don't know much about her. If you were like me before I did any research, and you just thought, oh, I know of her and she's associated with this crime and maybe she did the crime. I would strongly recommend, like Christian said, watching this documentary, this Netflix show. It's not long, an hour and a half, 2 hours, and just to get some backstory, because we do get into the weeds of what happened to her, but I think it would help to have some context, some more context. So anyway, obviously up to you. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I would just hope that you listen to the remainder of the show at some point.
And this isn't an ad for Netflix.
I'm also not begging, you know, I'm not desperate for you to, but it would be nice if you did. You're listening now.
Can I hear it now?
Yeah.
Can okay. I hear the interview?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah. This is my, I would say, you know, she's also listens to the show, which is very nice.
She does.
Yeah. So she's not only infamous, but she is a...
shorty.
I don't know if she's technically a shorty, but she's likes the show. So which is what we talk about. We talk about how she likes the show.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that.
Yes. And her crime, of course, the crime that she did not commit. You'll hear all about it when I talk right now to Amanda Knox.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboo.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, this ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up, we'll meet again.
When you were going through this ordeal, I was so aware of you, of your name and of this thing that was happening. And even though I didn't make any effort to read about it, that's how huge a story it was. What was your perception of how big it had gotten, how out in the zeitgeist? Like, would you see news articles? Would people from the outside share anything of that with you?
During the time that it was happening, I was very insulated from it. Yeah. I mean, like literally I was in a prison cell and I only had access to so many channels that were available inside the prison. My focus was not as much on the media attention about this case. My focus was on the courtroom. And it was the problem of my family to have to deal with this sort of onslaught of media attention wherever they went, whether that was people who were here in the United States reaching out to them, or anytime they came to visit me, there was like an onslaught of journalists who were there while they were trying to go from their car into the prison to go visit me. So like that was a whole thing that they had to deal with. In the meantime, I'm dealing with prison. Like that's what I'm dealing with.
What is that like? I mean, can you even, is that way too big of a question? What are the memories that that really stand out that you're like, oh, thank God I'm not there anymore?
Oh God, so many memories. all right. So to give a description of some of the scenarios that I found myself in. So one thing that was really big for me that was a coping mechanism was I read voraciously. I was very much consuming or practicing a kind of escapism through reading a lot. And I often just would plug, stuff in my ears to not have to hear everyone yelling or, doing whatever with prison sounds. And I would just sit there for hours and hours and hours on my bed reading. And actually, one of my favorite books that I read while I was in there was The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, because I just wanted something fun and uplifting, because my whole new, like, normal default setting was sadness. Like, I've always been, a kind of upbeat person and like, great, nothing bad ever happened to me in life. So why would I ever feel depressed or whatever? Like, and I've always been super positive. And then I get into an environment where I am exposed to a lot of very sad, broken, hurt people.
Would they target you ever? I mean, how vulnerable were you to people? Because you were famous in there, or infamous. And
yes.
What did the other inmates, how did they treat you?
Yeah, I was the famous prisoner. Because everyone was talking about my case. Everyone had an opinion about it. Everyone wanted to talk to me about it. And I very early on learned to not talk to people about it because it wasn't worth it. And I didn't feel better just sitting around stewing about it the entire time. I tried to like spend my mental energy thinking like, how can I make today worth living?
But it must be inescapable. I mean, or was it? Could you escape it? Like, are there times where you're having to socialize with other inmates and they're like, hey, so Amanda, tell me.
nice accent.
Sorry.
So there's no like way to not be involved in the prison community, right? Like you are a part of a community that is very small and tight, like close knit. I wasn't in like this huge prison that had hundreds and hundreds of prisoners. I think at maximum capacity, the female prison that I was in, the one building that we had 90 people in it. When I first went in there, it maybe had 30 people in it. And then there was this sort of swelling. I got to know a lot of people very well, insofar as I had to. So I very much stayed to myself for my own protection because I didn't want my own sort of personal feelings or experiences to become the gossip or the fodder that we sort of, we didn't have a lot to go on. So like that sort of interpersonal dynamics became this really big sort of issue of everyone's interested in. So what
I
did—
God knows who's talking to those shady reporters. I mean, some of those guys, I saw the Netflix documentary last night, and that one guy, Nick Pisa— what a piece of shit. I mean—
Yeah, that's what my family called him, Nick Piece of Shit.
Oh, I like it. I want to talk about your family too, because they seem impressive too in their own right. So you are not wanting to engage a lot with the prison population.
Yes.
How do you keep from doing that? How do you keep to yourself in that environment?
Well, what you do is you instead offer what you are willing to participate in the prison community. So I found out pretty early on that I was one of the only literate people in the prison environment, because this was a, you know, most of the prisoners were not actually Italian at all. They were very, 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 very poor people from other countries. A lot of them didn't even speak Italian. So as soon as I became fluent in Italian, I started being the unofficial translator of the prison for a lot of these women who are coming from Nigeria. And for those who were Italian and in prison, we're talking like the poorest of the poor, who also were not very well educated. And like, I could speak better Italian than they could. So it was a really interesting environment where I was writing people's letters for them. I was reading their court documents for them. I was helping them.
Oh my God. You were like Andy Dufresne.
Andy Dufresne? Tell me her story. Yeah, you were
from Shawshank.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's my only touchstone for prison life is
Shawshank. Yeah, the only thing I remember from that film, because it's a bit traumatic for me to watch, is the going through the poop part.
Yes. And yeah, like, tell me you didn't have to do that.
No, but I totally would have. If it was required, like if that was the only way, 100%,
right,
I would go down the poop drain, like without a doubt.
You wrote such a nice letter. Thank you for that. My brother read it to me last night, in which you say that you're open to talking about everything, but you know, that's good to hear, because I probably tiptoe around a lot of this stuff in an effort to not trigger you.
That's very nice of you, because some people aren't as considered.
I'm trying not to be like Nick Pisa.
That's
my goal in life. How do you talk about it without it conjuring difficult memories?
Well, there's no way to talk about it that doesn't conjure difficult memories. I think it's just how, like, it's the way that I am asked to talk about the worst experience of my life. And this is like a huge thing for me, because I think that coming home from this experience and, you know, having people treat me like this sort of object of intrigue and entertainment, and having my worst experience of my life be the object of that intrigue and entertainment.
God, I can't imagine.
Like that sort of has raised my awareness of how, like, I see it happening to other people. The way that I deal with it, and I find out very quickly if someone's, you know, a considerate person or not, is whether or not I feel like they are pushing me to talk about what I went through for their own sake instead of like for my sake. So when someone stops me at, you know, a bus terminal and is like, oh my God, I really want to talk about with you about your interrogation. And I'm like, well, actually, I'm just like on my way to the grocery store. I don't want to talk to you, random stranger, about my interrogation. Like some people will, I've had people like who I was, you know, buying a ticket from somebody, like hold on to my credit card until I answered their questions.
Oh,
and
God.
So like that is horrible.
Well, because of course you were offered up to the world as this, like you said, this object of intrigue, and you become then a commodity. But whereas I've heard from a lot of actors who, you know, go through moments of like, oh man, dealing with fame, there are moments of annoyance or whatever, but they in a way asked for it. You and it's about something that's inherently kind of fun and good. They're in movies or whatever.
Yeah.
But you're right. This is like all the result of this horrific experience that you had to navigate. I can't imagine what that must
So I actually have a lot of sympathy for celebrities because I don't think that anyone who has become a professional actor has actually signed up for their personal life to be consumed by people as entertainment.
I don't either, but I can understand that perception that it may have, or at least it's easier to for me to understand that. But for in your case, you weren't doing anything remotely public or, you know, that so you weren't in any way subject to that kind of scrutiny. It just happened to be this really horrible coincidence that...
That you can go from like a private person to a public figure overnight. I literally did nothing to do that. Like things happened to me. And then I became a public figure, and then suddenly all of my rights as a public citizen or as a private citizen go out the window because now it's in the public interest to know what my sex life is all about.
Like, oh my God.
That's interesting that, like, you know, all of these sort of rights that we think that we have can go out the window in a second if somehow the world, like, not even you cross a line. But
no,
the
circumstances
world...
just conspire against you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I found most intriguing. And you say that. It's a great way to start this documentary, the Netflix documentary, where you say, either I'm this monster, I'm this, you know, sociopathic, psychopathic monster who did this thing, or I'm just like you. And that's what I think is so compelling about what happened to you, because your testament to the fact that it could really happen to anyone.
Yeah. I think a lot of people sort of feel a little more comfortable with the idea that it only happens to like poor people and it only happens to like young black men. And it's like, well, it does happen to them a lot.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean that we don't have a system that's sort of set up to allow for such a thing. And that we don't have a media that's set up to... to sort of build upon and profit upon these sorts of stories.
Yes, that was another fascinating part of it. How the spin in the press. So much of it was had like really overt misogyny. And are you at a place where you can let go of some of that anger? Because I imagine there was a considerable amount of anger and frustration. Because they took so much of your time. I mean, we talk about that a lot on the show, how precious time is. And that's the thing that really struck me about, you know, every time you'd have to go through another appeal and you'd lose a case, it was like a year later. And I think about a year, especially like now we can all kind of like quantify it in this way, like collectively, that it's been a year that we've all been in this situation, in this pandemic. You probably don't want to give them any more time, you know, any more energy.
There's that. And I think that's pretty universal with a lot of wrongfully convicted people. I found that's pretty common where it's like, well, I was sitting in my prison cell. I literally just can't be mad all day, every day. I kind of have to still like do my daily rhythms in the same way that we're all in this pandemic. And we can't all be sad about being in this pandemic the entire time. We also have to do our jobs and have our relationships and make the best of what is a new normal, adapt to it, adapt to a reality. And it may be an unpleasant reality, and we may then be touched by that. I spent years of my life feeling like I couldn't plant roots and that I didn't have a future. And I was very, very just like on my toes, waiting to react to the next sort of thing that would hit me instead of living a proactive life and imagining, oh, you know, I wonder what I'm going to be, you know, 5 or 10 years from now. Like I was never able to make plans like that during my entire 20s because I was on trial.
I'm mad on your behalf. Like just the 20, it's impossible to answer, but I wonder what, and I'm sure you've wondered this, what you would be doing, you know, the type of people, the circles you'd be running in, how different your life might be.
Well, and what's really sad is, or at least what my husband thinks is really sad, is I occasionally am like, I don't know if you would love me if it weren't for like me having been put through this experience that made me mature really quickly and made me question all of these assumptions that I had about how the world worked. Like suddenly I live in this very sort of intellectual meta space because I was forced to sort of
right. Confront. Well, it's like what he said. It strips away all the extra stuff, all the and it forces you to examine your truth.
Yeah, and it trims the fat and it
yes. And also probably literally.
What a, it did actually. That was a little bit uncomfortable. Where at time, like I lost so much weight in prison, and occasionally, like people would be like, "Oh man, we should go on the Amanda Knox diet because she's looking great." And it's
oh
like,
my God.
My hair's falling out.
Like, oh my God. Well, one of the grossest parts of the documentary was when some journalist, I hesitate to call them a journalist, some journalist was like, oh, is she, she's not wearing makeup. So they talk about how you're like, you look like you could use some makeup or something. And I think it was Shepard Smith. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't know.
And that to me was like, God, this is what it revealed, a real ugliness about a lot of aspects of our media and our society, our need for sensationalist like gossip and that kind of fodder.
And our weird expectations of who ends up in front of the camera and like what context. It's like, why would you ever think if I'm coming from a prison cell that I'm going to be have right. my hair blown out? Like, what are you thinking?
The amount of expectations with somebody like you, I can't imagine. I and again, not that like, you're right, actors don't sign up for this, but like, well, this podcast, for example, I have no real right to say to people, well, you don't know me, because like the truth is they kind of do, because I'm just sort of like myself on this and I try to be in interviews and stuff, but in this case, it's like they're seeing something through the lens of a very specific, horrible thing that you went through. I and they have all these preconceived notions. It must be really off-putting. It must be really unsettling for you.
Well, what's beautiful about what I've found about the podcast experience is here you are, like having the opportunity to be yourself. Like you're right. not being a character. You're being yourself. You're expressing your ideas. You're having conversations with people mm-hmm. that are revealing an aspect of who you are, but it's still your choice, right? Like, so when I'm working on yes. episodes of my podcast, I go, I'm going to choose to talk about this. And I'm also going to choose to like talk about how my own experience has informed my ideas about this.
And oh, it must be so sharing. Liberating.
Yeah, it's so liberating to do that.
Yeah, and therapeutic,
to, like, relate. Like, the thing that I love about podcasts is having the opportunity to sit across from someone and go, we have no reason to be, like, to relate to each other or have empathy for each other, but we do, because all of these experiences are echoes of each other.
Right. And we can, I think that's why I was so compelled by your story, because there's, I can, in a much different, tinier way, relate to aspects of it, relate to false accusations and people saying things about me and people having a perception of me. There's still people, I'm sure, people in Italy, people wherever, that think you did this thing.
Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, I'm always trying to put myself in the shoes of the people who think those kinds of things, because I genuinely actually want to understand why. And a part of me finds it very easy to understand why, because if you have not invested a ton of time and energy to dig into the facts of the case, then the only thing that you've had access and exposure to is the most salacious headlines that made it into your sort of awareness space, that made it to the top of your Facebook feed. So if that's the only thing that you've ever been exposed to, then of course you're going to think that. Like, of course you're going to think that I'm a shady character, that I probably did something, but who knows
something,
what.
Yeah.
Like,
right,
I get
right. Because you absorb enough of that and it's out there enough that your name is associated with this horrific thing enough, even if it's like, you know, if it's a question as to whether you did or whatever it is, if you're associated with this horrible thing, that's got to stick. And that must be, I can't imagine what that must be like.
Well, and what's frustrating is, so I don't actually fault people for having those kinds of misconceptions. What I do fault is the way that the media is allowed to sort of say, well, you know, we're just putting it out there. People can decide for themselves. But what they do put out there is the thing that is going to get them the most clicks. And so
right.
you know, the nuanced, complicated analysis of all the facts of the case is not going to get as much clicks as you won't believe what Amanda Knox is, you know.
And that Nick Pisa, again, not to make it about him, but he more or less said that. He said, you know, I mean, this is what it's about. This is the game. This is like what, oh God, I can't stand that guy. in Talking to Strangers, the Malcolm Gladwell book, he says that your reaction to Meredith's murder, that's what led to the Italians falsely accusing you. It was and thinking you were guilty. How do you now, like in this whole different context, how do you explain that reaction? I'm sure you've thought about it a lot. I'm sure you've talked to Gladwell about it. Is there a part of you that like kind of understands the Italians for making this assumption? And
it's funny, I have a whole podcast episode about this.
Oh, I can't wait to hear. So the podcast, we should say, it's called Labyrinths.
Yes.
And this is the one you do with your husband. So you have an episode about Malcolm Gladwell.
Yes. So I interviewed Malcolm Gladwell and I discussed his chapter in Talking to Strangers about my case. Because
such a good book.
Yeah, it's a great book. But I also think that he was kind of wrong.
interesting.
Which is interesting because, like, I wouldn't have said that, say, you know, as soon as I got out. Like, I had very much sort of internalized this sense of, it must have been something about me. Why else would there be this focus on me? I must have done something weird, or I must have looked the wrong way. And what I have discovered by meeting other wrongfully convicted people is it's actually not as much about the person and whether how they acted, but it's about the people who genuinely have agency in the equation. So is it my fault that the, you know, the cops who originally made a judgment about me and whether or not I was acting appropriately decided to always sort of focus their attention on moments when I wasn't crying or I was saying, I'm hungry, I need some pizza. And they were like, well, a real, you know, friend would be so distraught that they wouldn't want to eat pizza.
Oh my God, the leaps that they're making, especially the guy that fetishized Sherlock Holmes, I mean, with the pipe and like, he was so clearly, that's the other thing. So many of these men were driven by ego and needing to, they already had a narrative of what happened. They just needed to help create it. But yeah, the leaps that they would take, like the fact that she was, looking to the left means that she was lying, or these, that was infuriating too.
I reacted to the whole situation in a lot of ways. Sometimes I was crying, sometimes I was not crying. Sometimes I was getting comforted by my boyfriend, sometimes I was just sitting there alone. And what gets remembered and reported is what allows for the narrative to make sense. It's
sure,
this retroactive justification.
Yes.
And I think that happens over and over and over again, that once the lens of suspicion is cast upon you, anything you do can look suspicious under a certain light. Do, 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 do,
shaboom. Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over. Because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical real-world language skills. And here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled B-A-B-B-E-L.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hello, hello again, Shaboom, and over we'll meet again.
It was 2007, so I was thinking too, like how different that case would be. You're talking about these other people who were wrongfully imprisoned and have gone through similar experiences, and oftentimes they make movies about them. I mean, I'm thinking of like Stephen Avery, or you know, mm-hmm. I think that's why these things are so compelling, because it is such a miscarriage of justice, and these authority figures are abusing their authority and their power. But now it's easier to kind of shine a light on these stories. It's easier to amplify them. There are hashtags, but that was before all that. That was before social media, really. Mm-hmm. How different do you think your case would be, if it happened today and with social media? Like what could you do differently?
Oh gosh. So we're imagining that today I'm 20 years old and I still have the sort of same frames of reference about authority figures that I can trust without question.
Well, see, that's hard to answer, right? Because right? you don't. I mean, it's,
It's a whole different world. What I have thought is not too long ago, my youngest sister, who's 11 years younger than me, she turned 20. And I remember having this moment talking to her on her 20th birthday, being like, so at this time of my life, I went to prison.
Like, you're like, don't go to Italy.
Well, that's the thing, though. It happens everywhere. Yes, so it's not like it's just this special thing about Italy. I didn't really know that wrongful convictions were a thing until I came home and I interacted with other people who were wrongly convicted. But so I definitely felt it's an Italy thing, but no, it's not.
What is it comforting to meet people like that? And is it kind of like a support group for people who have gone through that?
It is tremendously comforting in a way that is really hard to explain. It's so comforting that you sort of love these people without even needing to know them. There is amongst exonerees an incredible amount of just sort of immediate familiarity and love and support that is just like automatic. We have this sort of fundamental understanding and experience that is difficult to convey to other people what it felt like.
Yeah, I bet.
So,
do you have regrets, and how do you deal with that? Like regrets about, I know you were 20. I mean, you were a kid. Do you forgive yourself for any of the missteps that you took and during your interrogation, let's say? Or
yeah, I struggled with my interrogation for a long time. I felt like what my interrogation revealed was that I was a weak coward. Like as much as I didn't understand what was happening to me, somehow what had happened was my fault. My Italian wasn't good enough, or I just didn't remember the night well enough to make it understood to them. And so I beat myself up a lot. As hard as it was to hear a guilty verdict, the worst, absolute worst part of my experience, like if I were to distill it to one moment, was being interrogated. I have never been more scared and more confused in my entire life. The way that they broke me down made me feel like I was crazy, that I couldn't trust, question reality, question myself, question my own memory. That was by the book. And there was nothing unique or special about my experience. It was just one of the same ongoing problem. And it was comforting because I realized that, one, I'm not the only person that this has ever happened to, and two, that this was a systematic problem. It wasn't a me problem. And that allowed me to heal. you know, I look back on my 20-year-old self and I feel a lot. I don't feel shame for her. I feel sadness and I feel pity for what she was put through.
Well, I do too. I mean, yeah, I mean, I agree. What was it like talking to Malcolm Gladwell, and how did he respond to your disagreement with what he wrote?
Malcolm reached out to me because he was writing this book and he wanted to use audio from my memoir to supplement his audiobook. That was how he reached out to me. That's how I found out that he was doing a book. He didn't like interview me or talk to me. He just sort of like, you know, absorbed materials from around the way, read my memoir, and decided to write a chapter of the book about it. And I was like, well, wow, I'm getting Malcolm Gladwell. And then I said, Malcolm Gladwell, can I Malcolm Gladwell you? And I invited him on to, you know, talk about his obsessions and his, you know, his writing obsessions. I asked to read his chapter before he put it out into the world. I was just like, I'm not going to tell you to change it or anything, but I just want to read it. And he was like, yeah, absolutely. Here you go. And I disagreed with him. And I sent him my disagreements. And he said, well, I hear you, but it'll all make sense in the context of my book. And I was like, okay. And then I read his book and I was like, I still don't think it actually made sense in the context, but whatever, it's fine.
Yeah. Well, that must be strange too. Somebody that you admire and certainly respect changing your truth or however you, it's you. I mean, it was your behavior. Like, you know how you were feeling in those moments. Mm-hmm. And in the context of his book, he was trying to make a point about something else that people not being able to read one another.
And the reason why I even pushed him on it was that he sort of made this statement about wrongful convictions towards the end, where he was like, well, maybe the kinds of people who get wrongfully convicted are innocent people who act guilty. And that was sort of like the takeaway of that chapter is there are certain people in the world who don't act like we expect them to. And therefore, those are the type of people who get wrongfully convicted. And my objection to that is doing that same thing of thinking, oh, there are other people unlike me who get wrongly convicted. And my sort of pushback against him is you don't have to be a guilty, acting innocent person to be perceived as acting guilty. Like, who is actually judging the way you are acting is going, like, the lens through which they are viewing you, which is through suspicion, is going to color their perception of your actions. So no matter who you are and what you're doing, someone is going to be able to find fault in it. And that is where the disconnect is.
I'm now thinking about the section about you in that book, which is like now strikes me as being very cherry picking and similar in a way to what that detective did, trying to create this narrative, trying to make something fit.
Yeah, our human ability to see what we want to see is universal, and we see that across the board. Every day we see each other doing that exact same thing, seeing what we want to see. And I think we would all do well to be aware that we're naturally prone to that and to sort of step back and go, am I seeing what I want to see or am I seeing reality? I don't think we're very good at doing that. And that's one of those sort of silver lining things for me is I now sort of approach situations and constantly have this sort of reflex of like, am I seeing what I want to see? Are those people seeing what they want to see? What are we actually looking at?
Yo, you must have a much more honed sense of that. You must have a much clearer sense of that and more empathetic, I imagine, more compassionate.
I mean, I have a sort of radar that is constantly on, that's sort of searching for examples of when someone is becoming an idea of a person as opposed to a person, or when somebody, like when an idea is circulating that is a compelling idea, but maybe not an evidence-based idea. Like, these are all things that I'm just sort of alerted to because they have impacted me so personally. But I also understand how if something like that hasn't impacted you personally, then why would you ever look for it? Why would you, you don't have the same radar.
Well, Well, I was thinking, it's funny. I was thinking, when I was watching the documentary, when you are acquitted, not the final time you're acquitted, but when you're still in Italy and you're allowed to go home, there were hordes of people outside the courthouse screaming in protest about the verdict. And it felt very similar to the thing that just happened at the Capitol, which is like a bunch of people believed a lie. How did you feel about it at the time, and how are you now able to look back at that and intellectualize it, if you can?
Oh, I mean, the only way to do anything with it is to intellectualize it. That's the only safe way to approach it, because if I approach it from a place of, you know, wow, that's a really personal thing to me, I just feel sad. But like, if I want to genuinely gain some sort of knowledge or anything good out of it, I just have to intellectualize it. My experience of leaving the courtroom was not being like walking out of the courtroom into a crowd of people screaming shame, shame at me. Like, that was not my experience. My experience was being utterly shocked, because again, like, I had lost faith that the truth mattered. So I wasn't expecting an acquittal. And so I'm like being basically carried out of the courtroom by my prison guards, who are trying to console me because they think that I didn't understand the verdict. They're telling me, no, you won. And I'm like, I know. Like, they thought that I didn't understand because I was hysterical. And
oh my God.
And a few of them were like, good job, Amanda. I won like $20 because they were like betting on me.
Oh my God.
And then I go from, instead of being put into the regular prison van, which is this like windowless van that I'm normally put in, they put me in the back of a police car that has windows. And suddenly I'm exposed to this, like, I can see from the car window the street, and like, and that, just being able to see the street out of a car window after, like, I literally was just in a prison, then in a prison van box, and then a courtroom. That was all I saw for 4 years.
Oh my,
and then, like, God. I just see like a street with regular people on it. And I was so overwhelmed just from that. Super sensory overload. I didn't like sleep for a week after that, because I couldn't eat for a week and I couldn't sleep for a week. I was just like high and just adrenaline rushed, because here I am also like getting on a plane suddenly and being put into like an airport with hundreds of people and cameras. Like, it was so overwhelming. I had been for 4 years only exposed to my family members for an hour at a time at most. Oof. And so suddenly I'm hanging out with my little cousins who are running around, who I haven't seen since they were literally babies. And I'm just overwhelmed. That's the only thing I can say, is like adrenaline rush, overwhelmed.
Was there a paranoia that like, oh my God, this could go away, going to an Italian restaurant and hearing that accent? And like, I mean, were you being triggered by other stimuli?
So I was being triggered for, at least a year afterwards. I couldn't be around crowds of people. I remember I was invited to this Italian film festival. And I went because I was like, I'm trying to be supportive, and you know, I don't hate Italian people because of what I went through. So I went, but there was a moment during the film where a person in the film said a word that I had only ever heard in prison. And it was affacciati, which I heard a lot in prison, because affacciati means, you know, come, like, basically show your face. And it's their way of saying, like, come to the cell door, I need to talk to you. Usually, like, the guards are saying that, or someone else in the prison is like, hey, I need to talk to you, affacciati, come to the cell door. And in real life, what people use that to say is like, hey, I'm outside, come to the window, I want to talk to you, or come to the door. And I had only ever heard this in prison. And so when I heard the character say, hey, affacciati, I had a panic attack, like right there in the middle of the movie theater. I was like, I need to leave. I need to leave.
Oh my God.
So you know, it's still, even now, like when I encounter people and I hear Italian, like I'm still fluent and I can understand Italian. I do get a moment of like, oh my God, are they talking about me? No. Okay. We're okay.
I bet. Or like, I can't believe you went to a film festival. Cause if I were you, I would imagine you'd be so triggered by those long lens paparazzi, and the paparazzi were disgusting. I mean, I went through a period around that time where I was like, oh, they're annoying, whatever. But I can't imagine how you must feel about those people, the people that like climb over walls to spy and the constant like in the courtroom. And like, that was revealing. How are you around cameras?
I get very, very nervous around cameras. Thankfully, now I have a husband around who I like automatically just hide behind if I see a camera out. Going to New York is interesting because people have their cameras out everywhere. There's all these beautiful things that you can photograph. And I'm just constantly a little paranoid whenever I'm in New York because I'm like just
the technological change of everyone having a camera now. I imagine traveling anywhere is like you have a very recognizable face and it must get tiresome.
It's weird. It still sort of boggles my mind when, like during the pandemic, even I traveled down to, I think it was maybe Santa Fe. No, it was LA. It was LA because I went on Whitney Cummings' podcast. I walked out of the airport with my mask on. I had told no one that I was coming, and there were paparazzi out there, and they were like, "Amanda, Amanda," and I was just like, how did you know that I was like this? I have a mask.
Well, the people on the planes, there are a couple that are worse than others, but it's the people who work at the airlines.
I guess that's capitalism, but it's horrible. I really, really wish there were actual better protections because I don't think you can make a claim that me going to LA is in the public interest anymore. I'm no longer on trial. I am literally just doing I'm a podcaster. Like, how is that
That's
in the public
true.
Interest?
Well, I guess you can argue that, well, podcasts are entertainment, therefore you're an entertainer.
But even then, it's like, okay, why does being an entertainer mean that my private life is now in the public interest? Just because it might be entertaining to someone doesn't mean that it is in their interest to know. So
yes, I agree. I'm putting the devil in devil's advocate. who else has been on your podcast? It's called Labyrinths, and people can find it anywhere, right?
Anywhere. We've had such a great, we were so lucky with season one. We got Andrew Yang, who I know that you're a Sanders fan. Basically, I think
I really
that,
like Andrew Yang.
Yeah, I'm a big Andrew Yang fan. I think universal basic income is the struggle that needs to happen right now, because I think even just sort of imagining a world where we're still being judged and measured and valued based upon our productivity levels doesn't make sense anymore, because we simply don't work in the world and have value and productivity in the world like we used to. So having conversations about minimum wage seem like decades old conversations that should have been dealt with decades ago. And now we need to be having the universal basic income. So anyway, Andrew Yang and Malcolm Gladwell and LeVar Burton and this.
Oh, cool.
And you know, this.
Were you a Reading Rainbow fan?
Reading Rainbow fan, Star Trek, huge fan. I'm a huge fan. And, you know, he's definitely the most eligible bachelor on the Enterprise.
Next year. Did you tell him that?
I think I did tell him that.
And, even with those glasses, huh?
Oh, absolutely. That adds intrigue. Yeah. You're like, what do you see?
That's true. That's true. How many eyes do you have?
Yeah. And you can see like my heat waves, like, ooh.
Yeah. So you were more Star Trek than Star Wars?
I mean, I'm a huge nerd, so I love it. I just had more crushes on characters in Star Trek. Like, I little bit want Jean-Luc Picard to sort of be my daddy.
Your daddy.
You know, and like, I kind of want Data to just protect me and be my person here. Like, this is weird because, again, I'm also just a regular person who has crushes on people that I see on TV. Like, I had the biggest crush on Jackie Chan when I was a kid because he's just like so cool and he's so funny and like he's just amazing. So,
Interesting. Yeah. Did you watch what? And what other stuff? I'm hung up on what you watched in prison. Of all the things I could ask you, what other stuff were you? I mean, I know you're reading a lot, but what was another way that you were able to escape by watching like comedies?
There was only one show that I liked to watch on TV in prison, and that was largely because I didn't really actually have control of my TV. It was the other prisoners were the ones who.
I hope it wasn't Oz.
No, absolutely not. No. It was incredible. It was only on very, very late night on the one sort of like odd channel that you wouldn't think would be in prison, but it was MTV. We had MTV Italia in prison, and very, very late at night, they would do Flight of the Conchords. And I watched Flight of the Conchords, and it was bizarre because they didn't actually dub it. It was just in English. And so it was like the only person who could appreciate that show was me. And that was the one show that I watched. Other people were watching soap operas all the time. And so a lot of times I was being exposed to that.
Isn't it funny that like people are watching and then you were kind of a soap opera. You were a player in this like. Soap
I was
opera,
a real
so
type
many...
soap opera, yes.
Yeah. If people have not seen the movie, is that the one you would recommend? I know there are a lot of things about the trial and about your experience, but the one I saw was the Netflix movie. I think it was just Amanda Knox.
Yes, it's just called Amanda Knox. I think that the filmmakers of that documentary did a really good job. They had incredible access to people. And I think the thing that they did successfully that I try to do in my own journalism today is they gave people the opportunity not just to describe what they did and what happened, but what they think about what they did and what happened.
Yes, exactly. They kept it going up. They kept the camera, they added a little bit of footage at the tail end, even if it was like a second of a self-satisfied smile by the journalist or the prosecutor. It spoke volumes about how they felt, about their participation. And that helps tell this story. I mean, to me, it was so clear. I mean, if anyone listening is like, but did she do it? I mean, watch this thing. And it's like,
funnily enough, a number of people have seen the film or have seen the documentary and go, I don't know, though. She still just seems a little off to me. Like, I've had people say that to me. So, again, you see what you want to see.
Right. People say this on social media. Is that where you're consuming
this? Most of that is on social media where I'm exposed to it. But it also is a reflection of, like, even the kinds of, people who reach out to me to talk to me. Like, there are some people in the world who have just written me off as a human being, like, and not even as like, you're a guilty person, I'm not going to talk to you, but like, you're a tabloid person. The only place I've ever been exposed to you is the tabloids. So you must be a tabloid person. And it's frustrating because it's like, well, actually I don't do tabloid stuff. Like, that's not my thing. So I actually feel really like blessed and grateful when somebody wants to have a doesn't treat me that way. So thank you.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. Well, you also, my heart breaks for your experience. And again, like, I think just selfishly too, I think a lot of people can recognize the potential for their own experiences and what you went through and their own nightmare that they could go through. That anyone could go through this.
Yeah. And it could happen like that. Like, you don't have to do anything. You like, it just can happen like that.
Do you ever look at your life as being pre Italy and post? I mean, is that how you've kind of, how do you see those periods of your life? Do you look at it that way?
Well, I mean, it also happened at this like crucial juncture in my life where I went from being a child to an adult. So there's me being a child, a young person, an innocent, a naive. Then there's prison. and then there's adulthood.
God. So. Yeah. And how difficult too, Amanda, was it that, you touched on this earlier, and I this was part of the misogyny that I recognized, was how your sex life had become this thing that was part of stories, part of headline stories. And like, when you said the number of like partners you had had, I thought, well, shit, when I was 20, 21, I'd had that many partners, and like, I got started late. I was like a late bloomer with that stuff.
Yep, me too.
Yeah. So like, that didn't strike me as like a crazy number, not by any means. I related to that. And I also would have been super embarrassed if people knew that, if like my mother knew that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What was that like, having that plastered everywhere?
Well, it definitely... So when your life is on the line and your future is on the line, your sort of embarrassment about your sex life becomes secondary. At that point, like, again, you know, in the same way that like Shawshank Redemption, that guy was willing to drop all of his dignity and climb through shit to get out of a terrible situation. If it were the case that like I had to do, you know, the Circe, you know, walking naked through the city while being thrown food at just to like get home, yeah. I would have got like, I don't give a shit.
Wow.
I will go through anything. There's a desperation, and there's also like your freedom that is stripped from you unfairly puts everything else into perspective, and everything else becomes secondary. Now, granted, that didn't mean that I wasn't like sitting there in court going, oh my God, why are we talking about my sex life? This is about my roommate who was raped and murdered by a guy who broke into our house. Like, what does my sex life have to do with anything?
Right.
So there was that frustration of feeling like, well, it's frustration because it's like we're veering so far away from what is actually at stake here, which is a young
woman. What a weird smokescreen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
If you run an e-commerce business, you know the amount of work it takes to produce something great.
So if you want to optimize your workflow and reduce costs, ShipStation is the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates wherever you sell online.
ShipStation's simple dashboard makes managing orders, smooth label printing, reporting, and customer service unbelievably easy.
With shipping configurations automatically applied, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online.
Plus, save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off UPS, DHL Express, and USPS rates. Over 130,000 companies have grown their e-commerce businesses with ShipStation.
ShipStation is the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth.
Go to ShipStation.com and use code LONG to sign up for your free 60-day trial.
That's ShipStation.com, code LONG.
When your work presentations and docs look good, you look good.
Design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva.
Start with a designer-made template and use it as a springboard for your design.
Add images, graphics, charts, and more from Canva's massive media library.
If you feel like you have a lot of ideas, but it's hard to organize them into a succinct format, I can relate.
Yeah, so when we're putting together a pitch deck for a movie idea that we have that we're currently working on, mm-hmm. we're not going to use an old-fashioned deck. We're going to use Canva so our deck really pops. It's a complete game changer. So presenting our creative ideas, it's going to be like never before. We're going to wow people with our decks.
Wow any audience and finish your work faster.
Start designing today at canva.com, designed for work.
Hello, hello again, shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
When you do reenter society, what is your Zihuatanejo? When did you find like that piece that are you there now? Is that the island that you live on?
I mean, I found a lot of peace actually when I first met my husband, because mm-hmm. I met him under what were unusual circumstances for me. So when I first came home, I did not like to talk Like, I did not like meeting new people. I didn't trust anyone. I was very isolated. And I also felt really concerned because people, paparazzi, were following me. So if you were my friend, then you were going to be exposed to that kind of treatment. And people would read and you would end up on a, you know, Daily Mail headline. And that was not something that I liked exposing people to. And I felt constantly spotlit and isolated because of that. But then, like, very, very shortly after I was fully definitively acquitted by the Italian Supreme Court, I interviewed my future husband, but some mm-hmm. dude that I didn't know.
to be a husband? Was it like a husband interview?
No, like I was seeing
applicants.
No, absolutely not, because it was not on my radar to be intimate with anyone that I didn't know. It was just out of the question.
Wow, I bet.
And
so what was it for? What was the interview for?
I was doing local correspondence under an anonymous name of arts in the local community. So I would go to plays and write reviews, and I would read books, and I read his book. He published his debut novel, and I happened to stumble across his book reading. And normally this is not something that I would go to because it involved strangers in a room, so I would never go. But this time I was like, you know what? I'll just kind of sneak in and try to be invisible and, you know.
You saw his photo.
No, I didn't see
you
his
photo. You
saw
that Northwestern, aimed that Northwestern man.
Actually, like, when I remember when I first saw him, I was like, he had like stripes carved into his beard. And he had this sort of like eccentric style where I was like, oh, it's very like a modern day Elton John kind of vibe going from this guy.
Hopefully not that much like Elton John.
I mean, it wasn't as sparkly for sure, but I came away like, indeed, like I asked him for an interview. And so he invited me to come over to his house, and I, you know, we did a very official interview, but that sort of devolved into drinking scotch and watching Star Trek. And at the very end of this, like,
oh boy, I know where this is headed. Yeah.
But at the very end of it, he was just like, hey, we should be friends. And I was just like, oh my God, I can make friends with people now.
Yeah, wow.
Like, I didn't, it struck me. And that's when I was first starting to feel a little bit safer in the world.
That's cool. Was he, Amanda, did he know who you were? I mean, was he like, oh, you're Amanda Knox and you write for this thing? Did he have an idea of who you were?
He knew my name. He was aware that I was involved in some kind of true crime situation, but he was like a poetry guy. Like, in the middle of all of this, he had his nose like deep in Elizabeth Bishop, and he was not.
Oh, the book.
The poet.
Poet, the poetry.
And
okay,
the poet's
sorry.
Poetry, yes. So
I took that too literally.
Right, and she wouldn't swing his direction anyway. So
that's right. That's true.
But so he sort of kind of had heard about it, but he thought it had something to do with defenestration. Like, he had no idea. So
well, that's good.
Which was
How
great
nice.
Because he just sort of decided not to Google me. And instead just kind of got to know me from hanging out. And of course, I would sort of bring up occasional anecdotes. Like, he'd be like, oh man, have you seen the movie WALL-E? And I was like, no, I haven't seen that. He's like, how could you not see that? And I was like, when did it come out? I was in prison.
Were you living under a rock? Sort of.
Sort of. Yeah.
Yeah. What movies did you, when you got out, not movies, but just anything that had happened in society in Seattle while you were away, what were the things that most struck you? Or are you just so relieved to be free that you're like, whatever. Everything pales in comparison to being able to see the sky and go to the beach.
Oh yeah, I do not like regret having missed any, because again, it's more like, thank God I'm out. You know, I missed the whole like Obama getting elected first Black president. I missed the whole rise of Justin Bieber. I didn't know who he was.
Wow. Well, that's, you didn't miss that much. You missed Die Hard 4. Did you ever get financial compensation from Italy?
No.
Okay.
That's a no. No, no.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing that we do better here in the, I mean, it depends on what state you have here in the United States, but the interesting thing about wrongful conviction compensation is there are so many loopholes that that the bureaucracy of criminal justice has put into that to find reasons not to compensate people for their wrongful conviction. And they'll like say, well, because you acted suspicious, the police were justified in wrongly convicting you.
Oh my God.
So, you know, I'm not ever expecting to be compensated from Italy. I'm just having to make my own way and do the best I can. And,
and what about Meredith's, what about her family, the Kirchers? Are they like, did, have they ever made any overtures to be like, we believe you, or do they still believe that you did it?
So I don't, I can't speak to what they believe today. I know that they haven't made any gestures to reach out to me. And I do know that Meredith's father, who's since passed, published a book about the case in which he very, very blatantly feels that I'm guilty. But again, like he wrote that years ago. I don't know. I cannot speak to how they feel today. It's sort of an ongoing struggle for me of wanting to connect with them, but also understanding that of all the people in the world who might trigger them, that's me through no fault.
Yeah, well, that's the irony. Yeah, the irony is that you are now have a heightened sensitivity to other people's triggers and because of what you went through. So, I mean, that's admirable of you. And that's also like you're in this position.
The irony with that is that a lot of people accuse me of being incredibly ungracious and unthoughtful towards them because I dare to exist in any kind of public way. Like it, their sort of view is that if I really cared about the Kircher family, I would disappear from existence. Yeah.
Wow.
And I wouldn't talk about my experience being wrongly convicted because that is sort of a traumatizing thing for them. And it's this idea that like whatever I went through pales in comparison to what they went through, so I should just disappear. And I've never been in the business of trying to compare traumas.
Once the paparazzi subsided, or maybe it hadn't yet, but what was the moment where you felt like you could breathe and you could really like exist again in this in freedom in the world?
Did
you catch yourself like enjoying a moment of peace or like listening to a song or like laughing at a movie and you were like, oh, fuck, I forgot my ordeal. When did you feel like you started forgetting?
I definitely was impacted by the smell of home when I first came home. So, and like being exposed to nature again. So maybe like a month after I got home, a friend took me mushroom hunting. And feeling, I almost felt like I was walking on the moon because the earth was so soft. It wasn't this concrete that I had been used to walking on for 4 years. So being in like the quiet of nature, bouncing, like just glowing, bouncing on this like soft earth was extraordinary and very, very therapeutic. So
I bet.
Come home with like a huge basket of mushrooms and turn that into so much risotto. It's great.
Oh, how cool. You still eat Italian food. Wow.
Oh, yeah. I still go mushroom hunting and make risotto. Absolutely.
Wow. They're not going to take that from me. No. What is your most commonly used emoji, would you say, Amanda? Or do you use emojis?
I don't often use emojis, but I think maybe thumbs up. I don't speak through emoji all that often.
Well, you're articulate, so you don't need to. If you could be a professional athlete, what sport would you play?
Ooh, so what would I do potentially in real life? I used to play soccer, so I probably would have done soccer if I became one. But really, what I would want to be as a professional athlete?
Yeah, your fantasy.
My fantasy would be a Lindy Hop competitive dancer.
Lindy Hop, I'm picturing somebody actually hopping, but I know that's not it, like a bunny.
No, it's a swing dance. So it's awesome swing dance. I actually do Lindy Hop, but I am in no way professional at all.
They have professionals, huh?
Oh, yeah, they have competitions. Actually, you know what? After this, look up like, you know, Lindy Hop competitions. There's some wild, fun dancing that people do. That's really creative. Yeah.
I'll look it up actually right after I subscribe to Labyrinth. Okay. If you could have one snack food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Burrata.
Jeez. Wow. Really?
Yeah.
I would have thought all these things would be triggering. Okay.
Burrata. I mean, I did not get any burrata in prison, hun.
That's true. I was just about to say that. Like, I'm sure the prison food is not like, just because it's Italian doesn't mean it's good.
No.
Wow. Was it just standard? What was it? Like cafeteria food?
I mean, it was just like a lot of pasta. Like it was just a lot of boiled pasta.
Overcooked.
And yeah, just, authentic. You know, just like scraps of things. Yeah, the food wasn't great.
And could your parents bring you food? Could they smuggle stuff in?
So they were allowed to bring me certain kinds of food, and they did, because especially my stepdad, who was able to spend more time there than anyone else in my family, he's an IT guy, so he could do his work from abroad. His love language is food. So he found all these ways to smuggle in things that normally I wouldn't be able to have. Like on Thanksgiving, he was really intent on getting me cranberry sauce. There was no way that they were going to let in cranberry sauce. You could like hide drugs in it. So usually it's like solid foods that they allow you to bring in, and they're like in, you know, store-bought containers. Well, he froze some cranberry sauce. So by the time it arrived to the prison, it was solid.
Brilliant.
But by the time it arrived to me, it was sauce again.
It's amazing. Yeah. Oh, how sweet. What is your favorite movie sequel of all time?
I mean, maybe Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Okay. I've never seen any of them.
You are in for a treat, my friend. Read the books though first.
What's your go-to karaoke? Do you ever sing karaoke? Because I imagine you go in the private room, so you don't have to do it in front of everyone. But do you ever do that?
I love to do karaoke. And I really, really like to do either Zombie by the Cranberries.
Oh, Cranberries. Yeah.
Yeah. Or Rolling in the Deep by Adele.
Oh, great. Yeah. Oh, God. I love the Cranberries. A lot of cranberry talk all of a sudden.
Really? Oh, yeah. Cranberries.
Yeah.
It's like, who else are you talking about the cranberries with?
It's funny. Our next question is, who was your first celebrity crush? But I had such a crush on Dolores O'Riordan. Who was your first celebrity crush?
Probably Jackie Chan.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Wow. That's so interesting. You know, apparently he is... He's a very hard
worker.
Clearly,
he's not your type.
No. I think he's impressive as hell. Oh no, I think he's incredible.
Oh God, his like physical prowess is amazing. The fact that he can make fighting fun, and like his ability to do drama and comedy, like I just found him to be an all around awesome guy, and I really liked his personality. And I don't know. I like fun people.
What is your, do you have a tattoo? And if not, would you consider getting one? Oh, you do?
I have many a tattoo.
Okay. All right.
And I don't know. I mean, I can show you.
I'm wondering what, were these all post Italy?
Yes. Okay. One of them I had prior to Italy.
Oh, okay.
But most of them I got afterwards. And one of them is directly in reference to everything that happened in Italy.
Oh, what's that?
I have an Italy tattoo. So it's my biggest tattoo. It's all on my side here. And it is a lamb that is in this like triumphant griffin position that normally like the symbol of Perugia is a griffin in this like triumphant position, like on its rear leg, sort of rearing.
With its haunches.
And I put the lamb there with some olive branches to symbolize the lamb that wasn't slaughtered. So the sacrificial lamb that survived.
That survived and rose. That's cool. What a great, wow. That's hard to beat that. Have you thought about getting any more?
So again, I have a bunch. My husband and I have a bunch of shared tattoos. And the ones that are most directly relevant to our work are on our forearms as kind of reminders. So I have a bunch of symbols on my arm that have to do with like compassion and being willing to change. And, you know, being open, like always sort of viewing the other person's perspective from the in the best light possible, not trying to find fault in things, but trying to understand it from, you know, its best place. And also being very aware that like this symbol is skepticism. I don't know if you can see it, but it's a resistor symbol from electrical engineering. And what that signifies to me is a kind of skepticism and not just what kind of energy and information I'm taking in, but also in what kind of energy and information I'm putting out into the world. Being aware that I'm responsible for the kinds of things that I'm allowing to impact me and also the kinds of things that I am potentially impacting other people.
That's great. So, I love that.
You know, I look back on the one that I had prior to Italy and I go, wow, I wouldn't get that same tattoo today. It's like a chakra, but it's also kind of an important reminder of who I was back then.
Totally. Yes. So, yeah. You were a chakra tattoo girl.
I was a chakra yoga girl. So
yeah. What is your favorite fruit? If you could have like the perfect piece of like, it's perfectly ripe. What fruit in your fantasy?
Raspberry.
And who would you want to play you in the biopic, in the Amanda Knox story?
I would not want there to be a biopic.
Okay.
There already are a bunch.
Oh, right. Duh. Okay, I can't ask you this question. It'd be fun to do one, though, where it has nothing to do with your the Italian part of your life.
That would be interesting. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
At which point I'd have to reflect because I've mostly sort of dreaded the idea of yet another biopic coming out about me. So I'll have to think about that one.
All right. We ask everyone that, but I should have thought about that. Who's your favorite Simpsons character?
That's hard. I love Apu. I also find Mr. Burns to be hilarious.
Oh my God.
Of course. Funny.
Yeah.
And the like Cruella de Vil version of him with see my vest, made of real gorilla chest.
I really like the vest. Like, so... Yes, I gathered.
Oh.
That's my favorite part of that is at the end of it when he has that exchange with Smithers where he's like, I really like the vest.
Like the vest. And he's like, I know, sir.
I gathered. That's so good. Yeah. Oh, no. I love Monty Burns. I love when he goes to bunt in the when he gets all the ringers for the baseball team and he just flies straight back.
Yeah, he's great.
Excellent.
Yeah.
What about dogs or cats? Which do you prefer?
So I love animals. I'm a huge animal person. I have three cats. My husband is less of a dog person because he feels like dogs don't understand consent. Especially when it comes to his crotch. So
yeah, that's true. I agree with him. Yeah.
But like, I don't really care. Yeah, I have very little boundaries with animals and kids. It's like, whatever, pull my hair, do stick your finger up my nose. Like, I don't care.
Yeah,
He has more boundaries than I do.
Okay, well, we're almost done. Beatles or the Rolling Stones?
I mean, I think the Beatles are more versatile. I do love me a Rolling Stone song, but I think I've listened to more Beatles in my time, especially since I can like sing them. I can play guitar and
song. Oh, cool. Cool. What were you able to listen to music in prison?
So I had a little CD player. I was allowed a certain number, like 3 CDs at a time. I definitely remember grooving to the XX. Like I would just lay in bed and listen to the XX album over and over and over again and sort of like sadly touch, I had a few pictures of my family members. And so I would sort of lay them out on my bed in front of me and sort of like just touch them.
Oh man, it doesn't get more emo than
that. It's very emo. Like it's the only way to listen to XX, really.
Yeah, well, hopefully not the only way. Seinfeld you're watching TV and Seinfeld and Friends are both on. Which do you watch?
Oh, Seinfeld a million times over
same.
Friends.
Yeah.
And this is like knowing that my sister is a huge Friends fan, but like Seinfeld is just out of this world good writing and hilarious. And the way that the through lines of all the episodes come together in this like so satisfying way.
It's like a work of art to me. Some of those they're constructed in a way that, you know, how sometimes people, like, I've heard people describe mathematical equations that way. Like they're beautiful. I feel that way about Seinfeld. Amanda, thank you. I can't thank you enough for your candor and honesty. This was so fascinating and enjoyable. And I just admire you so much for your strength and how you were able to come out on the other side of all this and the way you persevered. That little lamb became rose against all of this.
Well, thank you so much. And thanks for having me and being a person with me.
So that happened.
Christian and I were just saying, because I was hesitating, I was trying to imagine how to imitate her. And he said, well, why do you have to imitate her?
That became a thing.
A thing.
Maybe like 20 episodes ago where you had to imitate the guest voice.
I don't know why. I don't know when. I think it was somebody whose voice, obviously, I loved imitating. And
right.
And it was just an excuse to do that. And then
she has a nice voice, but it's not one that's super fun to imitate.
No. And for me, because I have a deeper voice, it is harder for me to do... unless it's like Truman Capote, who has like a very clear, higher voice, you know, her, it's harder for me to do women.
In general, yeah.
Yeah, I hope people didn't just listen to that one sentence.
That's a soundbite.
And then turn off the show. fascinating, right?
Yeah. You know, it's funny, like watching the documentary, I was so convinced of her innocence. But hearing from her in this format...
I know.
She's like the least sinister.
I know.
She's like the least capable sounding person. Of being accused of such a thing. It's like
she's like a sweet bookish.
She's like a nerdy, self proclaimed nerdy, sweet, like kind of down to earth.
Did you just get nervous that you had called her a nerd and like?
No, because she called herself.
No,
a
I know,
nerd.
I know, but that's what you had to like qualify it. Self proclaimed.
Well, I had to qualify.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to call someone a nerd.
Especially after what she's been through. She's a nerd.
She's just some nerd. No, but she is a nerd. She's like extremely intelligent and well-read, and she's well-rounded. She goes mushroom hunting. And
I know.
She loves karaoke.
She's a really interesting person. I would like to, and I don't know if we talked about this, hang out with her and her husband out in the Pacific Northwest. Go mushroom hunting. She sounds like a really fun person.
I'd like to get into
mushroom
knowledge.
Me too.
You don't both have to want to get into mushroom knowledge.
What do they call it? They call it something funny sounding.
I forget.
But every time I see a mushroom out in the woods, like whenever I go, I think, I wish I knew. I want to eat it. I want to like know. I want to be able to go out and forage.
Yeah, I'd like to see you forage for mushrooms.
Little bass.
You know, when we told our mother that we were going to be doing this episode, her initial reaction was, ooh, which is a reaction that a lot of people might have if they don't know her whole story. It's a reaction that, I had when it was first presented
Me
to us. Because
too.
All I remember was the completely unfair media story that was concocted about her. The media never accurately told the story.
I know. It was...
And now I'm like kind of embarrassed
I'm
and ashamed.
Me too.
That I...
Me too. I bought into it.
I just bought into it without doing any... research.
I know. And there are obviously countless examples of that now. And, you know, there's so many stories of injustice that are having a light shined on them. And now, especially because, people are just more aware of things like that because of social media, because of streamings or all of these platforms on which to expose those injustices. But back then, despite all the coverage, that's the crazy thing, all the coverage that it was getting, the truth of it was so buried beneath all these salacious, unnecessary, inappropriate details.
About her sex life and how sexist the whole thing was.
Oh, my God.
She was painted as, like, a slut.
I know. And that's the other thing that, like, I still had that. There were remnants of that. Because it was so I was so exposed to it and didn't bother to do the research. And talking to it, that's why it was so shocking to actually talk with her and hear and see and feel how not that person she was.
She's like a Harry Potter fan. She could be friends with Ginny Goodwin.
I know.
Right?
I was thinking that. I know. Now I'm thinking of like the two of them talking about like, oh, what are you? Are you a Fluffernutter or a Hufflepuffer? About like What Harry Potter?
Oh, they'd be best friends.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, I should set them up. Friend on a friendship.
When she was going over her ordeals, what she went through, it's a harrowing story. You got so moany. You're like, oh, God.
Well, don't I get like that when I watch those documentaries?
Yes. You get very moany. And I understand you were moved by it, captivated by it.
So moved.
But it was very moany.
Oh, it was.
Oh, God.
It wasn't sexual sounding.
It wasn't sexual. Oh.
But no, I know it wasn't. Not it all, wasn't for me.
Not but, all moans are sexual.
I know, but did it sound?
There's like spooky ghost moans. No, those aren't sexual.
Ooh. What if that's how your sexual moan is? Oh. Ew. Like the guy who sings the Monster Mash.
Does the Monster Mash.
I'm about to ejaculate.
Oh, God.
Oh, sorry. We got to cut that out, right?
I don't think so.
Maybe not. Because we're going to offend that one guy who sings the Monster. Who does sing the Monster Mash?
Doesn't she make it impossible to ever like feel like you can complain about anything in your life?
Yes, yes.
But it's interesting to me that she decided to re-enter the public life in some way, by having a podcast. And you guys talked about the difference between, actors who, she said that actors don't really ask for that, but I disagree. I think when you
much
go
so
into that industry,
yeah,
you need to
for
expect that.
That
your personal life is going to be
that's
exposed
what I,
to some degree.
That's what I meant, that there was a potential, that there had to be, I mean, you've got to be, you know, blind to not
right,
know that there's a
potential. But she had zero desire to have that. But now she does. I mean, she has a podcast.
Right.
And, but then when she talked about it, I realized that when she first became famous, she had no choice. And now she's choosing to do this. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like she's taking the power
taking the
back.
Power. That, well,
and,
that, yeah. She kind of says that, doesn't she? That like now she's able to, she has a voice. Mm-hmm. Whereas like that was the most frightening. The part of her ordeal that I never really appreciated, definitely didn't appreciate, was that she lost her agency, mm-hmm. her voice. I mean, even that freedom, the freedom to express your truth was taken away from her. And that I can't imagine.
At one point, she said her husband, when she met her husband, she said he was like a modern day Elton John. And you said, well, I hope not that much like Elton John. And she said he wasn't as sparkly as Elton John. But I don't think she understood what you were saying. Made me laugh.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that if he is like him in that way. Nothing wrong with having a
absolutely not.
A
gay I love Elton John.
Yeah,
her the sport that she would play if she.
Oh, could. I knew you were gonna love this.
I would bet
that's nerdier than Ginny.
I would bet almost all my money on the fact that no one will ever say that again.
Yeah,
as their favorite sport.
Yeah, unless we have someone who participates in is known for that sport.
That. One thing alone should be enough proof that you need to know that she would never be able to commit this kind of crime.
What's it called again?
Lindy Hop, competitive dancing.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever been a Lindy Hop murder. A murder, like the Venn diagram of Lindy Hop enthusiasts and murderers, I don't think.
They don't connect.
They can't connect.
No, they're two different circles.
Like, I wonder if they introduced
that. Is that offensive that we're laughing about this? Because the thing itself, obviously, I mean,
we've made
it
clear.
Saying the murder itself is so horrific, and like what that family had to go through is awful. But right now, we're discussing her, Amanda.
No, I know.
But I think we should clarify that we're not laughing at the event.
Of course not. No. I mean,
we're laughing at Lindy Hopping.
Yes, we're laughing.
And maybe we should, maybe the Lindy Hop enthusiast listeners will be offended by us laughing at it. We shouldn't. Swing dancing's cool.
Yeah, no, I know. But like, I don't
but
think...
as a sport. It's funny to say that as a sport.
Yes. Also, I don't think they would. I think they also, what we're saying is also flattering in a way to Lindy Hoppers because...
it's a fun thing to say.
Yeah.
Lindy Hopping.
I wasn't quite sure what it was until I looked it up afterward. It is like line dancing.
Swing dancing.
Swing dancing.
It's cool. I like swing dancing.
Yeah.
I wish I could do it.
Yeah. I would never have thought of it as a sport, but I
there,
guess it
there
is.
You go.
It's active. It's more of a sport than golf, and active wise.
I don't know about that. Golf is clearly a sport.
More murders, more golf murders.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Let's read a letter.
Okay. Could you just feel it petering? Okay, this is a letter from Ronnie Marsh. Ronnie spelled, is that the female spelling? Not that there's a difference, but R-O-N-N-I?
How did Ronnie on Jersey Shore spell his name?
Ronnie the Rhino?
Yeah. R-O-N-N-I-E.
What if Ronnie the Rhino's listening?
I hope so.
I saw Ronnie once. I told you this, right? At the gym.
At the gym, you told me that.
And he was surprisingly short. He was huge. Like, he looked
I wouldn't be surprised by that. He's like as wide as he is tall.
Yes. He had a rhino build. He really did. Okay. This subject is my mom. Justin, I love listening to your podcast. Thank you, Ronnie. I think you are very funny. Thank you, Ronnie. I'm writing to you because I think you should totally date. Have you read this?
Yeah.
You should totally date my mom. Okay. Oh, it's very sweet. Thank you. I don't mean to laugh. I'm fit.
Back You're to, just surprised.
I'm surprised. I'm laughing. It's very sweet. It's very flattering. Can you imagine wanting? I don't know if I've ever thought that about any. I mean, our parents are still married.
It's hard to imagine you wanting your mom to date anybody.
Anybody. Yeah. Yeah. It's a very flattering.
She's been dating our father for 47 years.
Okay. Back to Ronnie. I'm 15 and wanted to tell you a little bit about my mom. Okay, thanks, Ronnie. She's 36 and has two kids, me and my younger sister. You guys both have a lot in common. It's hard to get through this because I'm going to cry. This is such a sweet.
It is sweet.
Isn't it really like flattering that.
It's really nice how much he loves his mom.
I think he might be.
Like that alone.
It might be a girl.
Or she.
She, yeah. Either way, it's nice. So nice. Okay, back to Ronnie. And back to her selling me on her mom. She, excuse me, she is very down to earth, loves to laugh and have fun. Aw, she doesn't care about money. She has a job. I love, by the way, Ronnie, all of these things are so great. What a great way to like sell somebody. She has a job. Okay, bought a house a couple years ago and takes care of me and my sister by herself. This is so great. She's our biggest cheerleader and is always there to support us. She always has our backs, and she is the same way with everyone in her life. This is the goal in life, to raise a child who thinks this of you, isn't it?
I think so.
Oh, my God.
It's a goal.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the goal.
It's not the goal, but it's what a great thing. Okay, back to Ronnie. She's not perfect by any means. And not who is, Ronnie? She's not the best cook, LOL. That's okay.
You've gotten to be a pretty good cook.
Yes, I can make up for that. But I don't think she really knows how great she is. Oh, at least we think so anyway. She is goofy and weird, and we wouldn't change her. She loves to learn new things and is happy with the simple things in life. She gets excited over the dumbest stuff. Hey, occasionally
like you.
I also like that she thinks this of me, that she thinks I would respond to this, which she's right to. And back to Ronnie. And is perfectly happy spending the evening watching a movie with us. She's naturally loud. I can always tell which one is my mom when I am playing soccer, LOL. I really think that you would hit it off with her. I've included a picture of her just in case you are curious. Her name is Melissa, BTW. Thanks, Ronnie. And there's a picture that I can't see because it just says pasted graphic. Have you seen?
Oh, yeah.
Not that it matters, but I'm curious because all of those things
you know,
are
I don't,
so nice.
I don't have it. I'll show you when we get
You know home. What? It shouldn't matter. She sounds like a real catch, Ronnie. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, it's so nice. It is just so great that you think that of her, all those things. Because those are the best things to say about someone
so
you love.
Never know what happens. Maybe you'll meet her one day. And I think you'd be a good stepdad.
I would love
you
that.
You have good stepdad potential.
Yeah, it would be really nice. I love kids. She sounds great. So Ronnie, it'd also be cool to have somebody, like a stepdaughter like that. Because she seems
or
like
stepson.
A, or stepson like a Ronnie.
Because, you know, a lot of 15-year-olds, I feel like are at that age where they're like embarrassed by their parents.
Exactly. I know. I know.
And it's nice that Ronnie is not embarrassed. The opposite.
The opposite. Like really.
It's like really like into how cool his mom is.
Or her mom. And recognizes attributes like that there's value in those things, that she doesn't care about money. She laughs at dumb stuff. She, you know, is support. All those things that she mentioned are such nice things to value. Not like she didn't mention her looks really, or like she has, you know, superficial things that are like kind of gross.
So thanks, Ronnie.
Oh,
and,
so sweet, Ronnie. Thank
and if you,
you
guys want to write in, our email address is lifeisshort@wondery.com.
Yeah, if there are any other potential stepchildren,
yeah,
who want to parent trap,
but you don't have to be a child to write in.
No,
but you can.
Yeah,
you can be an adult too.
I feel like that. We don't often get letters from people that age, and it's also cool that some. I also like that somebody who I know I would like listens to the show.
Well, thanks again, Ronnie, and thank you to our guest Amanda Knox for being so open to telling her story. And,
What a story.
Yeah, what a story.
What a way to make the best out of a really horrible situation.
I hope you all, all of you who aren't as familiar with her story or weren't as familiar with her story, I hope you watch that Netflix movie, because it is, I think she deserves to have as many people know about her as possible, because what she went through is just so like wildly unfair that I hope there are fewer people like me out there moving forward who are like, oh, Amanda Knox, that's, she do it or didn't she? You know, that, because that's not fair that she has to live in that world.
And in general, try to open yourself up to learning facts of cases like this. And I'm talking to myself too. Yeah. I'm not preaching. I'm too susceptible to, like, you know, superficial details, skimming over news stories. But there are people's lives who are hanging in the balance.
Yes, and check out her podcast, Labyrinths.
Yes, great podcast. I listened to an episode. It is truly good, and as is she. And we really appreciate her coming on.
And we'll talk to you all next week.
Yes, thank you, Ronnie, and thank you, everyone, for listening.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-boo.
Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long. It is co-hosted by you,
Christian Long.
And it is produced by you as well, as one.
Megan Monaco.
Senior producer is Michelle.
Mish.
Lands. We'd also like to thank Mauricio here in Sarasota at Bay Sound. Really appreciate the use of his wonderful facilities. And our audio engineer, Sergio Enriquez. An executive producer by the name of
Marshall Louie for Wondery.
You can only watch one for the rest of your life. Jesus, that's a good question. Wow.
A sport.
Arg, that is tough. That was nerdy.
Basketball's fun. It's quick, and it's like...
I might pick basketball, too.
You get some quick baskets in.
But watching football is so fun.
But you're waiting so long. There's so much to spend.
I know, but it's such a, like, great... It's such a great, like...
It's really tough.
Like spectator sport, because it's fun to go to a bar and drink. You know what would be hard to never get to do again in my life? Go to like an outdoor Austin bar, have a few Lone Stars, and like watch football outside. Watch like two games in a row.
I'm really torn.
I've had such good memories from like watching football games.
So you pick football.
But it's hard because basketball is so much more exciting and. It can, but football
baseball
can.
Baseball's not even an option.
No, not for me. I really like going to baseball games, but watching baseball on TV, unless it's the series, kind of sucks.
Too. Like the World Series, the series. That's like a middle-aged guy thing.
Oh no.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life Is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.